Welcome to episode 48 of The Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and each week I publish a new episode with a new climate champion as my guest. This week's guest is Jason Anderson, President and CEO at Cleantech San Diego. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at www.krivatenergyinnovations.com. Cleantech San Diego is a member-based trade organization that positions the greater San Diego region as a global leader in the cleantech economy and smart cities movement. As a nonprofit organization, Cleantech San Diego is uniquely suited to support the industry by fostering collaborations across the private, public, academic landscape, leading advocacy efforts to promote cleantech priorities, and encouraging investment in the San Diego region. Cleantech San Diego's members include more than 100 local businesses, universities, governments, and nonprofits committed to advancing sustainable solutions for the benefit of the economy and the environment. If you want an unprecedented opportunity to connect with key stakeholders and explore what's next in the utility sector, join me at GridConnects this week in Washington, D.C., from December 10th to the 12th. I'll be recording an episode of The Climate Champions live with Miguel Romero, VP of Energy at San Diego Gas and Electric. They're at about 45% RPS already on the morning of the 10th, followed by world-class experts exploring diverse perspectives and uncovering market innovations poised to redraw the electric utility landscape. Secure your spot at GridConnects by registering now at GridConnects, that's an X, not a C, .com. As president and CEO, Jason manages the overall organization and leads several initiatives critical to the mission of the organization, including advocacy efforts, economic development programs, and Smart City San Diego. I had the pleasure of working with Cleantech San Diego to found the Smart City San Diego initiative almost 10 years ago. Jason is also executive director of the Cleantech Education Foundation, designed to develop education and workforce development programs aligned with the mission of Cleantech San Diego. Welcome to the Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat. I'm here with Jason Anderson. He's the president and CEO at Cleantech San Diego. Jason, welcome to the Climate Champions.
Thank you. Thanks for having me here.
I love downtown San Diego, so I love coming down, especially we're in the Little Italy section. So you have Ballast Point Brewery. There's the Crack Shack with the chicken.
You got James Coffee up the street. You can stay well-fed, well-inebriated, and well-caffeinated.
There's a place I like here called Not Not Tacos.
Yeah, yeah.
I like that place. Yeah, I love coming down here. With regards to climate change, what was your motivating moment where you felt you had to engage?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So I actually grew up in a pretty small town in Texas, the son of some pretty conservative parents. I like to say that I think my dad still listens to Rush Limbaugh on a daily basis. My grandparents and my parents lived in a very small farming community in West Texas. My grandmother still lives there. My aunt and uncle still live there. And so I have close ties to what has become a pretty conservative state within the United States of America. I saw firsthand, really, when I moved to California, I made the switch from Texas to California, as all smart people do.
Whoa.
And landed here in San Diego.
You know, I do have listeners in Texas.
That's sure.
Funny, you know.
You know what? And I'm still a Texan. I will always be a Texan. But when I moved to California, it was really the first time that I really understood what climate change was and what it meant. I actually worked on land use policy, electric energy policy, and water policy when I was in Texas. I worked for a state senator there from San Antonio. So I understood the renewable energy industry, but had never really thought of it in terms of climate change. We didn't really talk about that in Texas. We just talked about affordable electric generation. And the area that my boss represented had a lot of wind resources in that region. So we built out a lot of wind turbines, even before transmission lines were built out there. But again, it was really based on energy and the economy, less about the environmental benefit of renewable energy. So I moved to San Diego on a whim, because again, all smart people move west at some point in their life.
West Texas is west.
And I was even in the far west Texas part, which is a whole other story. But obviously, Scripps Institution of Oceanography is here, and I really started to understand you know, what this climate change was and really what our role as the human race is in kind of where we're going from a climate perspective, both from a causal perspective, but really what we can do as individuals and in corporations and as communities to really start to minimize the impacts of climate change. So I would say kind of the aha moment for me, to quote Oprah if I can, was really coming to California and really understanding that there are institutions that have dedicated significant amount of resources, both financial and human capital, to really understanding the impact that we have on the climate, and probably more importantly, understanding the role that we have in minimizing those impacts today and tomorrow.
Was there a specific moment that really moved you?
I think so much credit is given, and I'll even give it to Al Gore in The Inconvenient Truth. I think watching that movie or that documentary for the first time, I think compiled it all in one kind of setting for me and one learning opportunity for me. I think that was a critical point in my life, and really taking the message that Al Gore was delivering as part of that documentary, I think, was really strong. I met him subsequently, probably 4 years or so ago. And after he commented on my bow tie, which was made of Legos, I actually thanked him for putting that documentary out. And I thanked him for the message that he delivered as part of that documentary as it relates to climate change, that this isn't just an environmental issue, it's a human rights issue, it's an economic issue. And I think that message, regardless of where you were coming from, resonated with quite a few people.
I recently had Vint Cerf, co-father of the internet, on my podcast. He also gave credit to Al Gore for motivating him. And then he was kind enough to introduce me to Al Gore via email. And I asked if Al Gore would be on my podcast. I should say Vice President Al Gore. But his chief of staff said he was too busy. So I still have him as a goal. I would love to get him on the show.
Yeah, you know, I think he's done a lot for this conversation. Again, I think what he did was depoliticized it to some degree. I think he humanized it to some degree. And I think he really raised the point that this wasn't just an environmental issue. This was a business issue. This was an economic issue. And if those two things could come together, the solutions for minimizing or mitigating climate change would come to market much quicker. And I think we see that. We see that in San Diego. We obviously see that in California. And I hope we're starting to see that more and more across the globe.
Why is climate change mitigation personally important to you?
I think because I live in San Diego. I think when you live on the coast, when you live in areas that are prone to wildfire threats, that are prone to sea level rise, you understand the impacts. We see a lot here happening in our region where institutions like the Port of San Diego and the Regional Airport Authority and even the military are really monitoring sea level rise and how it impacts their operations. And I think as a resident of Southern California, you understand that. We are facing a time right now where half of California seems to be on fire. I think we see the constant threat of a changing climate to our region, to our state, to our economy. So I think it's personal for many people here in California and even beyond. I go back to my aunt and uncle in the small town in Texas and the farming community that they live on. I talk to my grandmother every Sunday night, and almost every Sunday night I get a weather report from her on how much rain they have or hadn't had, what that's doing to the cotton crop, what that's doing to the farmers in general. So I think they, in that community, probably don't necessarily categorize it as climate change, but they understand the patterns of the weather and how those patterns can impact their daily lives and their livelihood. So I think no matter where you are in the country, no matter where you are in the world, I think more and more people are starting to understand the impacts of climate change, whether or not they agree with the science, whether or not they want to call it climate change. I think most people are seeing a change in weather patterns that, as I think most of us would agree, are the result of climate change.
So you said most of us. So when you interact with people that don't attribute the weather issues that we're having to climate change and don't understand the data, how do you try to convince them?
Patiently. I actually have two very close friends of mine that I work out with at the gym every single morning who don't believe in climate change. They think it's a hoax. They think it's made up. They don't think the science is real. They live here in San Diego. They're from California. And I try to step back and put myself in their shoes and try to understand where they're coming from. I'll be honest, I haven't been able to do that, or at least understand that. But I try to, I try to do my best to humanize it for them, to make it personal for them, so that it's not something that is 50 years out or 20 years out or 10 years out, but something that we can really think about today. So as I mentioned, fires, wildfires, sea level rise, surges in weather patterns, et cetera, really trying to help them understand that and also pointing them in the direction of some what I like to call science for English majors, that they can actually read, hopefully digest, and hopefully understand, and try to change their minds over time. I don't think it's something that any of us can do in a 5-minute conversation. I think it's something that we have to engage in on an ongoing basis and make sure that we're not attacking them or calling them stupid, but really making sure that they're coming from a position where they're willing to read the facts, understand the facts, trust the facts, and hopefully digest those into changing their mind.
Recently, a friend of mine on Facebook started posting that it was a hoax. And I know him well. He is a data person. He's a computer scientist, machine learning. So I couldn't fall back on the argument that he wasn't analytical or he wasn't trying. He actually had done research and he had found a few articles that I think have all been debunked. And I started to respond, but he just would send me another article. And it takes a while to do the research to debunk each thing. Yeah. And at some point, I felt it wasn't worth the time.
I agree with that. But I will say, I think I would respect where that person's coming from as opposed to where other people come from. I think people that can come to the table with their own facts, however they want to define those, and they've done their research and they have formed an opinion based on that research. I respect that. I respect that process. I respect that even though the decision or the opinion is different than mine, that at least they've done their homework. Whether or not they're looking at credible resources or debunked resources, at least they've tried. So they're at least coming from a place of knowledge, at least research. So to me, at least that's whether you want to call it fact-based decision or not, at least it's a decision based on something, as opposed to some that just come to their conclusion based on what they've heard on the news, what they've read, nothing that they've actually gone in and sought out information to help them create their own decision, but more that they've just heard from others what they think.
It was a big moment for me because I'm doing this podcast in essence, to spread the word and to get more people engaged about what the issues are, what's being done about them, and to show how many people are engaged. I think that's important. So for me to decide not to respond, it surprised me that that's how I reacted.
Have you failed? Have you failed yourself? And have you failed that person? And have you failed the overall issue? I will say, I think here in San Diego, I think we're fortunate. Again, someone used the term the other day as I was talking, something to the effect of California splaining or cow-splaining, kind of like mansplaining, but cow-splaining, kind of us in California can tell others what to do. And
cow-splaining.
You can say you heard it here. And I understand that. I think I'm cognizant when I go outside of San Diego, when I go outside of California, that not everybody lives in a place that we live, and not everyone is surrounded by kind of science in their own backyard. I think for us, the benefit of living in this region, not only kind of living along the coast and kind of this wonderful climate we live in, but that we live in a community that appreciates research, appreciates science because it's in our own backyard. Many of our neighbors work at Scripps Institution of Oceanography, or we have some connection to Scripps and the work that they're doing. So I try to put that in perspective when I leave this state, that not all are fortunate to sit where we sit from a geographical perspective. But hopefully, as we continue to cow-splain outside of this region, more and more people will get it. And I'll say, talking a little bit about Cleantech San Diego, so the organization that I run is Cleantech San Diego. We're a renewable energy trade association. We've been around for 13 years. When we first started this organization, we really came at it from an economic development lens. We saw what was happening at the state level with the passage of AB 32 and our Global Climate Solutions Act, and really saw the economic opportunities that created. Obviously, significant environmental benefits as we increase our renewable portfolio standards, et cetera. But we saw the opportunity to create another economic pillar in the San Diego region. In California as a whole, and San Diego in particular, we've really showed that aggressive climate goals aren't at the expense of the economy. The clean tech economy in San Diego has about a $7 billion impact on our economy. We employ over 46,000 people here in this industry. That's more than the entire coal industry in the country. We've got about 3,300 companies in the space here in our region, and our economy's pretty solid. The state of California, aggressive climate goals that touch almost every part of the state, and we're the fifth largest economy in the world as a state. I don't think those things are insignificant, and I think when we think about climate change, when we think about environmental goals to get us to minimizing our impact on climate, when we can really start to talk about the economic opportunities associated with that, and I think Al Gore started that conversation in Inconvenient Truth, I think we're proving here locally and throughout our state that these two things aren't at odds, that they can live and work together and be beneficial both to the environment and to the economy.
Thank you for bringing Cleantech San Diego into the conversation. Can you talk about what you do at Cleantech San Diego?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, Cleantech San Diego is a trade association primarily made up of renewable energy companies, companies that have some sort of connection to the electric grid, whether that be from electric vehicles, generation, transmission, distribution, et cetera. But we were started as an economic development and policy organization. So again, wanted to make sure that San Diego was creating a new economic opportunity or a new economic pillar in our region. So spent a lot of time in the early days advocating for policies that created market services. Certainty, not only in our state, but in our region. Worked very closely in the early days and still do with our investor-owned utility, SDG&E, as they were increasing their renewable portfolio standards. We saw the business opportunities here in San Diego for those types of goals. As we saw the industry grow, as we saw the RPS goals, renewable portfolio standards increase to now 100% carbon neutral, we also saw the economy grow, and we saw the number of jobs in our region grow. We saw the number of companies in our region grow. So we have been kind of a catalyst locally, a facilitator of conversations or between the environmental community and the business community. And when I say business community, I really mean the business community as it relates to the renewable energy industry, and really understanding the benefits to both. I don't think this is an either or conversation kind of within those two entities, being the environmental community and the renewable energy business communities, but how can we work together? So over the years, we've run a number of different programs. We have worked with cities around our region to convert streetlights to LEDs. We have worked with early stage energy companies to help them get their technology to market. We've spent a lot of time outside of San Diego educating kind of the broader world on what we're doing here as a region. And we've spent a lot of time educating folks within San Diego about the opportunities, the economic opportunities associated with this movement. When we first started the organization, we didn't talk a lot about climate change. It was still pretty a political, divisive word at that time. I took over the organization about 4.5 years ago, and even before that, to some degree, it was like, look, we've got to recognize climate change, and we've got to recognize climate change as a reason that we're all in this together, especially because Scripps Institution of Oceanography was one of our founders, and we're constantly given the facts about where we are from a climate perspective and where we're going. And obviously, the news isn't great. So we spent a lot of time really building communities and building an initiatives here locally to support the growth of this industry. By no means do we take credit for a lot of the progress that the San Diego region has made in regards to kind of where we are from a renewable energy or technology perspective. And where we are today, we've got about 45,000 EVs on the ground here in San Diego. We've got about 1,600 public charging stations. We're home to the world's second largest utility battery storage facility. We've got two more coming online, one which will be the largest in the world, at least for a moment, until another bigger one is built. 45% of our energy here locally comes from renewable energy sources. We have the second most rooftop installations on our houses here than any other city in the country. The military is engaged in looking at renewable energy from a climate resiliency perspective, from an energy independence perspective. So there's a lot of great things happening in our region. Most of those are built upon policies that were passed and being passed at the state level, whether it be SB 100, AB 32, you know, you can go on. And
you're talking numbers no one knows what
they don't know what they are, but do some research on them because it's good stuff. But what I think is really interesting now is our cities are now really starting to take a leadership in the climate conversation. So cities around our region are passing climate action plans. I think 17 of the 18 cities have either passed or are in the process of passing climate action plans. Those plans call for things such as 100% renewable energy and generation for the residents of the community. They call for increasing mobility options to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. So we're seeing more and more leadership at the local level now, again, kind of on the backs and on the heels of what the state have done. But for us, we think about that as kind of creating another level of market certainty and another level of market opportunity. And our members, our private sector companies, I think are well poised to help our region and help our state meet their renewable energy goals and some of the other goals associated with their climate action plans.
Have you had other cities or another city spin off a clean tech organization of their own based on talking with you?
Yeah, some have. There's actually a really solid organization in the Research Triangle that has started off as kind of just a tech organization and now are running what they call the Research Triangle Clean Tech Cluster. So they have an organization that's similar to ours. We actually share a lot of members with that organization, but they are focused on what we're focused on, kind of the economics behind this and building out an industry to support the growth. We've seen other organizations in Colorado and elsewhere that have formed to really tackle these issues and be both weighing in on policy issues, but also kind of figuring out how they can deploy and develop renewable energy technologies for their communities. LA is probably the best example. There used to be CleanTech LA, started in the mayor's office, then it went to UCLA. It's now the Los Angeles CleanTech Incubator. They're doing some innovative programs while still kind of maintaining that economic development kind of policy focus. So we see them all over. There's organizations, the New England Clean Energy Council, run by a guy, Peter Rothstein, who's doing some amazing work in the Northeast. There's the Clean Energy Trust in Chicago. So we actually have a relationship, you know, just a not a working relationship, but try to see those folks as much as we can and talk to them when we can, just to understand what they're working on. I have no shame in copying what others are doing if it's going to benefit our region, but I don't think any of them do as well.
We're all in this together.
Exactly.
Can you talk about some of your prior background?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, I went to the University of Texas at Austin. I started interning at the state capitol in Austin, maybe my sophomore year. Stayed with that senator that I started interning for until I left the state of Texas. Worked my way up to be his legislative director and spent most of my time working for him, like I said earlier, on energy policy, land use policy, and water policy. He represented the area from southern San Antonio all the way to El Paso. So if you're familiar with Texas, that's a lot of space and to some degree a lot of open space. We used to say we might have more cattle in the district than actual voters. But at the time, when I was there, the wind industry was really building its assets out in kind of the far west part of Texas, where there were a significant amount of wind resources. Today, Texas generates the most wind industry or most wind energy than any other state in the country. But at the time, it was really an opportunity to start to build out the infrastructure to support the growing wind industry. As I mentioned earlier, there were still no transmission lines, but many saw the opportunity for capturing the wind resources in West Texas. So, yeah, that came with some controversy from an environmental perspective, from a land use perspective. So really worked at the state level on policies to support the growing wind industry in the region. And then moved out to California, worked for the San Diego Regional Economic Development Corporation for a number of years. And then we actually applied for a grant to support the growing algae biofuels industry, along with CleanTech San Diego, with Biocom, which is our life science trade association here in Southern California and really the world, and UC San Diego, to really start to build out curriculum to support the growing algae biotech industry. And so when that happened, we won the grant. It was through the state of California. I actually came over to CleanTech San Diego to run that grant on behalf of the organization, and that was 9 years ago.
You've been with CleanTech San Diego 9 years?
I have.
Wow, very nice.
Yeah, it's been an interesting run. You know, this organization, I'm really proud of the work we do. I'm really proud of the members that we have around the table. We have more technology members as part of our organization today than we ever had. As no surprise, organizations like ours are usually kind of set up with the service industry, with the accounting firms, the legal firms, and et cetera. And those are still important members of ours and do a lot of work on behalf of our organization, our region, and our members. But we're really excited to see more and more interest from technology companies and renewable energy developers in the region. So we have global companies that are part of this organization like GE, like Avangrid, EDF Renewables, NG, TerraGen, LS Power, you know, people that are doing stuff all over the world. And we're fortunate to have them as members of CleanTech San Diego. So we support and work with those types of companies, but we also work with early stage and smaller companies in our region, companies like like Measurable and others who are earlier stage, but being and doing a lot of great work. So it's just a great organization to be a part of. Again, we are here to represent the industry and to represent our members and to work with our members. And we're really, we do things at the direction of them. I think what's been really interesting for this organization is we've stayed small and we've stayed nimble and we've done that strategically. We're not trying to be everything to everybody, but we're trying to really make an impact where we can. And that impact is really on the energy side, the renewable energy side, the electric vehicle side, the smart city side of the business.
Can you talk about setbacks that you've had, challenges?
I think for any organization like ours, the challenge is always raising money. That's the hard part.
That is the number one challenge I hear about.
It is the number one challenge. But again, we have dedicated members. We've been strategic. We haven't grown the organization for the sake of growing, which I think has been really smart. It's been a leadership decision, and I think it's been a wise one. We have been strategic in going after certain grants that help complement the work that we're already doing. So we've been successful in that, both state grants and federal grants we've gone after. I think the most successful one, the one I'm most proud of, is the one that we're currently in year three of. So the California Energy Commission put out a solicitation for four organizations around the state to be a part of what they call the California Energy Innovation Ecosystem. Cleantech San Diego put together a pretty robust proposal to go after that grant. We were successful. That grant is what we use to create the Southern California Energy Innovation Network, which is a program that is supporting early stage energy entrepreneurs in the San Diego, Riverside, Imperial, and San Bernardino region. So kind of Southern California. To date, we have about 27 companies in the program right now. Primarily software companies, but companies that are doing some pretty innovative things. We've had some great success stories. And we, along with three other organizations like ours around the state, are leading those initiatives. And it's really allowed us to kind of tap in and support early stage energy entrepreneurs in this region, as well as be a part of a larger ecosystem in the state of California that is supporting entrepreneurship in the energy space.
So I asked you to talk about setbacks, but you talked about a big success.
Sorry.
No worries.
Isn't that what you're supposed to do in an interview? Turn the setbacks into success?
Everybody does.
Yeah.
Can you talk about some other successes you're really proud of?
Yeah, I think, another thing we've been able to do is really just bridge the gap between the private sector and the public sector. When we first started this organization, SDG&E was a critical piece of our organization, and they still are. But we're seeing more and more cities, public agencies really take the lead, or at least start to better understand their environmental footprint, their energy footprint. And we've been able to help them understand the economics behind that and how working with the private sector can help them achieve some of their goals. Again, whether they're around mobility, renewable energy generation, et cetera. So I think our ability to be a third party kind of neutral convener to bring our members together. Again, we're all in this together. We're all trying to work towards the same goals, but really creating a community here that is really in support of the growth of this sector in the San Diego region, really in support of meeting aggressive climate goals, but doing that together. I always say that, we have corporate giants that are part of our organization, but at the end of the day, they're San Diegans. And so they really care about this region because they live in this region. And so that in and of itself, I think, has been really powerful for our organization. I'll touch on a little bit of setbacks, I think, as it relates to this industry. I think, a lot of the political rhetoric sometimes finds its way in quite often into kind of the environmental conversation, the renewable energy conversation. Again, fortunately for us here in San Diego, there's a couple of electeds that don't necessarily get it. Both of them, I think, one's out of office and perhaps the other one's out on his way out of office. But, for the most part, our elected leaders in this region, whether they be Republican or Democrat, understand what this industry means, that we all need to be moving forward and together around climate goals. So, the San Diego mayor right now is a Republican, and under his leadership, the city is advancing one of the country's most aggressive climate action plans. That's something worth noting. Obviously, in the state of California, our elected officials are leaning in a way that's supportive of this industry. A setback, I think, happened with leadership from the United States. But I think what that has done is empowered local communities, local agencies, local states, individual states, to really start to understand how they can tackle these climate issues and these environmental issues on their own, or perhaps even together, and understand the role that they play in this global conversation, either with or without leadership from the United States.
It's interesting because, yes, It's very common when I ask about setbacks for people to turn it into successes. But you went the other way. I asked about successes and you threw in a setback. So thank you.
You're welcome. You're welcome. I didn't want to ignore your first question.
No worries. Can you talk about your vision for the future? Where do you see San Diego, California, the U.S., the world in 20 or 30 years with regard to climate change?
I want to say that we're moving in the right direction. I think despite the political, again, kind of rhetoric and some of the setbacks from a political perspective, I think the rest of the world and most of the world is moving in the right direction. That being said, we have a lot of work to do. I've noted several times that San Diego in this region has 100% renewable energy goals. I think that's really exciting for our region. I think it's going to create huge environmental benefits, huge economic benefits, huge community benefits. I think there's a lot of exciting things there. But we're only one very, very tiny piece of the puzzle. And really, in order for this to be, and for us as a civilization to make impact at a global community, we've all got to be doing this together. So it's complicated, it's hard, it's challenging. Sometimes you can get a little cynical in terms of, we're doing this here, but you know, when you go to other parts of the world and you know, they're still just using plastic bottles to get their water from because they don't have other clean water resources. You know, you start to look at just the trash buildup and some of these just really fundamental things that we've got to make significant shifts in those. And we've got to respect that in some areas, in some countries, what we take for granted here from a renewable perspective, from an economic perspective, there's many parts of the world that don't live like we do. I mean, it's going to take a long time to transition them into a space that's clean and that they can benefit from economically. So, you know, oftentimes the cheapest way to do things is sometimes the only way to do things. I mean, it's sometimes considered the best way to do things. And I'm not saying that renewable energy is more expensive. I think in many cases it can be less expensive, especially as you talk about microgrids and distributed generation, as opposed to building transmission lines across a country to deliver one small village power. But I think it's relative to where you are, what you're working on, what you're focused on. And there's got to be, and we've got to all start to really think about how we do this together. So it's daunting sometimes, and those challenges can be pretty daunting when you think about it from a global perspective. But I feel like, for the most part, we're moving in the right direction. But what we really need to see is things done at scale so that we can really start to make an impact. But I think, you know, I think one good thing about the debate against whether climate change is real and whether climate science is based on facts or whatever is that it has empowered those and really motivated those that believe in the cause, believe in the facts, to really start to be more vocal about it. And that's kind of this, I think, groundswell of importance that I think is happening more now than it has in the past. So it's not bad to have opposition. It's not bad to have those that disagree with you. It's not bad to have those that question you, because I think what that does is it just empowers you to be stronger and to really work harder to hopefully make a difference.
Do you have any questions for me?
You know, I think you told me you've done 70 of these.
I'm nearing 50 right now. All right.
What have you learned along this journey, and what have you heard, and what are some of the common threads and common themes that have come up as you've been talking to folks around the world?
Let me see if I could summarize a few of the big points. I would say Al Gore really helped because he motivated a lot of people. I'm hearing that a lot. A lot of people no longer believe it's the time for trying to get the last 20 or 30% of the people in the tent, and to instead take what we have and move forward as hard as we can. A lot of people believe that no matter what we do now, we're going to truly suffer. There's going to be a lot of impact based on what we've already done, and we really need to get with it as fast as we can. I think a lot of people have the double feeling, which I share, and that is that on one hand, we think we're making really good progress, and that's exciting, but on the other hand, it's daunting. There's so much to do. Can we really get it done?
Yeah, and I think on that note, I'll just say we've obviously made a ton of progress here in California. We have a lot of work to do, but we've made a lot of progress. But yet still today, we have some of the worst air quality in the country. So as much as we've done, we still have a lot to do. And I think that's, you know, that kind of goes back to that, the equation that we all have to start working on these issues together, as opposed to kind of just some going out ahead and leaving others behind, because we still have a lot of work to do in this state. And I think that trickles into the rest of the world eventually.
imagine if we hadn't done what we've done.
Right, right, right.
Well, I think LA was pretty smoggy back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, parts of the Central Valley and others are still smoggy. So we definitely have a lot to do. But I think the electrification of the automobile industry plays a part of that. Obviously, renewable energy generation plays a part of that. Building infrastructure to support mobility options for people plays a part of that. So it's not a one-size-fits-all. There's a lot of different areas. I think we're fortunate to in this region to have organizations that are working together, but also working on specific issues that are important to them and their members. And again, I think collectively, I hope we can continue to move the needle.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
You know, I think in the climate conversation right now, especially here locally and in the state of California, there's a lot of focus on equity and investing into disadvantaged communities or communities of concern. We call them communities of concern here in San Diego. You know, I think there's always been an environmental justice component to a lot of the work that's being done. I think that's elevated to a whole different level now. Again, I think communities are kind of raising their heads and making it known that, you know, they're a part of this effort, they're a part of these issues, they can benefit and they can be a part of the workforce. And so I really like where the conversation's going around equity as it relates to energy. I don't think that that's happened too much in the past. Again, there's been always an environmental justice conversation that's been powerful and extremely important. But I really appreciate the community starting to really get engaged in these issues. There's an organization in San Diego, the San Diego Urban Sustainability Group. I think that's what they call themselves. But just a really fascinating organization made up of community members and organizations like ours and others that are really trying to raise awareness about the opportunities in these communities of concern, but also raise how these communities of concern are an important part of the equation as we move forward.
Thank you for bringing up that topic. That was great. And with that, let me wrap this up with a wrap. Jason moved to California because smart people know it's best. He's from conservative parents in Texas, far west. Complimenting a Lego bow tie, we hear about him once more. Thank you so much to Al Gore. Sea level rise and fires causing great harms. On Sunday night, you talk to your grandma about the rain situation on farms. There's a new term and I found it very entertaining. Folks from California are always calsplaining. $7 billion, 46,000 jobs are ironic that clean tech investments and energy goals can be so economic. San Diegans can't turn their backs on climate change because we get tips from data rich in our backyards. They helped founded us, Scripps. You're bridging the gap between public and private sec. Toria came to Clean Tech San Diego for algae biofuels and biotech. About state and assembly bills, you can really rant. You're 3 years into a Southern California Energy Innovation Network grant. Despite the fact that we had one really bad election, the world seems to be moving in the right direction. Globally, it can be daunting, but we can focus on the local. It's not bad to have opposition because it makes the groundswell vocal. Environmental justice is so important, and I'm thankful to learn about equity in energy for communities of concern.
Mic drop.
Mic drop indeed. Jason should be the one dropping the mic. In 2014, he was named one of San Diego Metro's 40 under 40, and I can see why. That was an intense discussion, with Jason showing his deep knowledge and passion for making a difference with regards to climate change in San Diego and the world. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at www.crivatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. And if you're in San Diego and want to trade your concern about climate change for a few hours of some great laughs, most weekends I'm doing improv comedy at either the Old Town Improv Company or Finest City Improv or both. Contact me to confirm specific show dates. And if you want to release from some of life's stress or just to improve your speaking skills, consider taking an improv workshop at an improv club in your town. Jason is a board member of Equality California, the nation's largest statewide lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender civil rights organization. He's also on the City of San Diego's Sustainable Energy Advisory Board, the County of San Diego's Comprehensive Renewable Energy Plan Technical Advisory Committee, and the San Diego County Regional Airport Authority Advisory Board. He is fully engaged in energy equality for all and helping to mitigate climate change.